So I'm going to be talking to you about some work that I've been doing for the past few years as part of my thesis, and hopefully this will continue your interest in open clusters and draw you in a little bit more. And so what I'm going to be showing you is, and I want you to keep in mind, is that, as you well know, there's a complicated interplay between stellar dynamics and stellar evolution that goes on even in open clusters. And I know a lot of you are, you know, used to globular clusters. But so I'm going to think about what I'm showing you in that context and how these type of interactions and the combination of these two things can produce what we're observing. But before I get into this, I just think I have to mention some of the collaborators. And this is all part of the Wind Open Cluster study that Bob told you a little bit about. But I kind of came into this at a very opportune time. I've only been working with Bob for, you know, 4 years or 5 years. But this has been going on, gathering the data has been going on much longer than I've been here. Also, I need to mention just that I've been working with Dave Latham because I'm going to be showing some data on M67 that he and Bob had been collecting for quite a while. And then, of course, Jared, who you all know and love. So I'm going to start out. I'm putting this cartoon here. It's actually made a movie of the output of John's few body code for one of the scattering experiments that I was running. And the reason I'm putting this here is just so you can get an idea of some of the type of resonant interactions that might happen in this type of environment. And again, these are the type of things that might be catalysts for the production of strange stars like blue stragglers. And at the same time, these type of interactions going on in a population of binaries can alter their characteristics. For instance, the distribution in eccentricities or periods. So as an outline for my talk, I'm going to give you just a very brief bit of information about the observations that we've been making. And then I'm going to start talking about NGC 188 and focusing on the binary population, the blue stragglers that we see in this cluster. And then, moving from there, I'm going to compare this to some of the other clusters that we've been studying, as well as the Jared's M67 simulation. And then I'll tell you some about the future directions that we're going to head. And I should say, if you have any questions about any of this, feel free to interrupt me. Okay. So I'm showing here is a picture of the underside of the WIND 3.5 meter telescope. This is where we get most of our data, and we're doing spectroscopic observations using the Hydra multi-object fiber-fed spectrograph. And as Bob was saying earlier today, this allows us to observe a relatively large number of stars over a 1 degree field. And this allows us to get quite a few measurements of every star in the cluster. Okay, so right now we have over 8,000 radial velocities of over 1,000 stars in the field of NGC 188. We've observed every proper motion member in there a few times. And this data set is also combined with some radial velocities from the Dominion Astrophysical Observatory as well. To see, you can get an idea of the sample that I'm talking about. We have a mass range of about 1.14 to 0.92 solar masses. This is around the turnoff. Includes a few magnitudes below the turnoff to pretty much the brightest giants in the cluster. Includes almost all of the, we believe it's pretty much all of the blue stragglers. And this goes out to a radius of 13 core radii. The longest time basin that we have for some of these observations is 35 years on a given star. Most of them are 11 years. And so 11 years is the time that we've been observing this cluster with WIND. And as Bob said earlier, our precision is about 0.4 kilometers per second. And if you can see down here, this is just currently what we have found is that it's 360 stars that we call single, 132 stars that we call binaries. And the majority of these we actually have orbits for. I'll show you an example in a little bit. And just keep in mind when I'm talking about binaries that we're only sensitive to binaries with periods less than 10,000 days. So we're not even detecting if there are longer period binaries in there. Okay. So this is basically a lower limit on the number of binaries that are in the cluster. Okay. So given all these radial velocities, we can do a few things. And some of the first things that we can do is identify what stars are the most likely members of the cluster and identify which stars are binaries. So I'm going to take you through a little sequence here. This is a color magnitude diagram, V and V minus V for NGC 188 and M67. What I'm plotting here is what you would basically, if you took a snapshot of the cluster, including the field, this is what you would see. and you know, especially around an NGC-188, you can see that there's, you know, the main sequence that turn off, but it's not totally clear what stars actually belong to the cluster and what stars belong to the field. But once you have this extra information and proper motions and radial velocities, you can identify which stars are in the cluster based on moving with the same velocity in the cluster. And you can also identify which stars are single based on if you have a time series on a given star and the velocities are fairly constant, it's most likely that it's a single star. So I've called these normal singles because I removed any of the interesting, you know, blue stragglers that are also single. But this is, of course, what everyone learns in school about how the evolution of a cluster should look. You have a very tight main sequence, and it comes up in a giant branch.
But I guess what I wouldn't ever teach is that there's that much variety on the red giant branch.
Right. This. This is in here.
Why is it that spread? Yes.
Yeah. That is a good question.
These are all RGB stars, not AGBs. Where's the red clump?
Well, there may not be a very noticeable red clump in this cluster.
What's that, listen?
It's about solar.
So this could be a little loop on the giant.
Where would the red clump be?
It would come out to somewhere right here. Yeah.
But now remember, he's removed the detected binaries, but their white binary is still in the sample.
Right.
So
is the width of the main sequence consistent with your photometric errors, or is it wider?
That would not be significant for the
photometric errors. I think the photometric errors are pretty small.
Your main sequence also is actually wider than...
But again, this could contain some binaries that we haven't detected.
No, it's very small.
It's fairly old ideas.
I think we're all ruined because we've seen HST data where it's clean and just a lot of things happen. So,
well, yeah. Well, let me show you what happens when we add some binaries. So the binaries have these orange dots, and you can see, you know, this raises above the main sequence, raises up here, adds a little bit more complexity. But I also notice that the fairly large number that I'm adding on here in both M67 and NGC-188. Again, these are only normal binaries. Okay. Now if I add on all the stars that we think are cluster members, it gets even more complex. And so in M67, Bob showed this earlier, and I'm going to show you some of the information that we have in NGC-188 in the next few slides. So obviously arguably one of the most well-studied and interesting populations are the blue stragglers. And I've just drawn this little box around where we identify our blue stragglers, roughly. We find 22 blue stragglers in NGC-188. 40% of these have rotation that we can detect, so they're spinning. Okay, and 73% of these are in binaries. And this is, again, a lower limit, because these are only binaries that are out to 10,000 days.
That's a half.
Not quite half. Yeah, so now you're getting some interesting numbers here, Fred.
Those things right down there, next to the main sequence, really call those blue stragglers?
I've anticipated your question. So I am going to talk more about the blue stragglers. This is just giving you a little taste of what's to come. So yeah, so I don't know, what would you want to call these stars?
Are you going to show us the rotation distribution as well, maybe?
In a sense, yes.
What is your definition of blue stragglers?
Well, the definition of blue stragglers is basically I took an isochrone, okay, that I fit to the cluster, that would have gone like this. I accounted for any stars that would have been, say, 0.7 magnitudes above the turnoff that could have been in a binary. Okay. And so anything that is bluer or brighter than this is in a blue stragger region. And there's a plot in my paper that has the actual definition you can see. But, you know, we find a few stars down here in both in NGC-188 and even, I think, NGC-6819, we also see these. And so I don't have a good explanation for them. Well, these are all three-dimensional members, proper motion and radial velocity. So again, yes, some of them could be there. There are three of them in here. So, yeah.
How many sigma are they away from you?
Well, I believe the error on the V magnitudes I'm not sure exactly around 16th magnitude, but it's something like 4 millimagnitudes, so it's pretty small. So these are really significantly separated from the main sequence. And I have plotted these points are rather large, so you know, think about that.
Can I just ask that the expectation would be you have this mass spectrum on the Red Giant branch because of the blue stragglers, and those would then tend to be a little bit to the blue with the higher mass envelope. So is your isochrone on the red side of where your data goes on?
As far as to identify the blue stragglers?
No, sorry, I'm back on the Red Giant branch.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so where would your theoretical isochrone?
It depends what family.
The blue, I would guess, of that.
It depends. So if I put a theoretical isochrone, you're saying where does the isochrone lie on the Giant branch? Depends what family you want to use. So if I use the Yale isochrone, it comes up a little bit over here. Okay. If I use the Padova family, it comes up more or less right in the middle here. And this is actually something that Peter Frenchboy, who you may know his name, he's a postdoc right now at the University of Wisconsin. He's working on comparing the different isochrone families and seeing how things like this, systematic differences between the two, will affect your fits that you get.
Well, I think one thing that's probably robust is for any given isochrone, how the Red Giant branch shifts with age.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Which is that, mm-hmm. if I remember right, the more massive system should be slightly bluer. So my question is, can you explain the diversity you have? Independent, whether it's left or right, the diversity you have at a fixed magnitude with just the mass spectrum you expect from what you see on the blue stragglers.
I suppose the other way of asking that question as well is, given the number of blue stragglers you have, if you just make them regular main sequence stars of that mass, roughly how many giants would you expect compared to the regular turnoff?
100%.
No, but they evolve faster.
If you make models of blue stragglers and you track them onto the giant branch and you check see where their giant branch is, it's roughly in the place that you see there, so you do get the width of the giant branch.
No, but they should be.
Yeah.
They should be bluer.
They are.
Right. So my question is that consistent? So if you go back, I'm sorry.
Sure.
Because I mean, I think if you go back to, you can see the contrast. So in this cluster, you've got a higher blue straggler fraction than in the other cluster you showed.
Oh, go to N67.
Right.
It's roughly similar, actually. You see.
But it's certainly less broad for a giant.
So I guess it's a self-consistency argument. I mean, at some point, there's got to be confidence in some basic stellar physics,
mm-hmm.
in which case there's a self-consistency check, which is more of a theoretical problem than your technical problem. But it seems to me that there's a sanity check that isn't happening here, which, you know,
well, one of this is the mass loss rate and how that changes.
On that part of the Red Giant branch? Almost none.
If you're
three magnitudes below the tip.
If you overflow where the collision products or evolved blue stragglers lie, they do lie on the blue edge of that observed Red Giant branch.
Fine. So the question is the spectrum he observes, right? The diversity he observes on the Red Giant branch consistent or not with the seen blue stragglers population?
Yeah. My guess is that you would see too many bluewood red giants if you think they're all derived from blue stragglers.
That's okay. You should go ahead.
Yeah. Keep in mind that this is only the this is not the very interesting things that I hope to share with you. So. So it's only going to get better. Right? So. Getting to where I was, I just wanted to point out one blue straggler that I find fairly interesting, and this is, I'm also going to take this as an opportunity to show you the type of orbits that we can get for these stars. So this blue straggler happens to be double-lined, meaning that we see both stars in our spectra, and because we see both lines, we can get velocities for both of the components, and we can actually identify the mass ratio fairly well. And we find a mass ratio of about 1, which indicates that there are probably two blue stragglers in this binary here. And you know, if you believe that they're formed from two stars merging or more, then that means that at least 4 stars went into creating this one point on the plot here. And what I'm showing here is the radial velocity as a function of the orbital phase for the primary enclosed circles and the secondary and open circles. And these solid and dashed lines are the fits that we get from our orbital solutions. And so we have orbits like this. Some are not, they're not all double lined, of course. We have orbits like this for on the order of 90 binaries, around 90 binaries in this cluster. And I'm going to be talking about their characteristics in a little bit. Before I do so, I want to point out a few more of these stars. Here's a, possibly a quadruple system in NGC 188. So this, the observations look of this star actually, in a sense, look similar to the other one where we see two sets of spectra. We can get the velocities for both, but when we try to solve for the orbit, we find that both components have different orbital solutions. And it turns out that they're moving at consistent with the velocity of the cluster. And so the hypothesis is that this is a quadruple system. And I mention this also because we see indirect evidence for triples, a few triples, okay, in NGC 188. And I think there's better evidence in M67 with actual orbits for the triple star. Okay, and of course, you've got your one star down here that may be in the, a sub-subgiant. It's in that same region. Okay. Again, we don't really know much about it, but it looks like its velocity varies, and we think that it's in a binary. Okay. We don't have an orbit for this one. Punchline here is that many of these stars are hard to explain if you don't include some type of combination of stellar dynamics and stellar evolution. Okay, so open clusters do offer a very interesting group of stars to study. Okay, so now I'm going to transition to talking about the binary population of NGC 188. So you can get an idea of the type of data that we have on actually a few clusters. So I'm going to show just NGC 188, but keep in the back of your mind that sometime in the near future, these will also, data like this will also be available for open clusters of a range in ages and different characteristics. So again, the yellow dots, orange dots are the binaries. Okay. We believe we detect about 93% of the binaries out to 1,000 days, 77% out to 10,000 days, and outside of 10,000 days, we're not detecting basically any.
That's so, a very silly question. Yeah. Questions. How do you work those numbers out? Actually?
This is through a Monte Carlo analysis in which I basically create a population of binaries and observe them the way that we've done.
Oh, that's a theoretical.
So I can then take my observed populations and figure out what the binary frequencies are. And these are just observed, not corrected for incompleteness. But again, these are only going to include binaries out to 1,000 day periods. The main things that I want to point out is that the blue stragglers have a frequency of 73%, whereas the main sequence has a frequency, binary frequency of 21%. And these are significantly different. So there needs to be some explanation for why the blue stragglers should preferentially have binary companions.
Is there an obvious reason why the giants are more frequent?
Well, it's not significantly different.
Blue stragglers. Well, no, that's it's showing that the blue stragglers are primarily involving binaries.
Yeah, there's no. I don't think there's any reason I can think of why they should be a higher, but then again, if you look at the error bar, it's not significantly different.
Would it be easier to detect whether they are in binary?
I don't think so. Certainly if you get very faint stars, your signal-to-noise is going down the spectra, so your precision does go down. Okay, but I don't think this is a big problem for us.
Okay. But why your giants have a higher binary fraction than Mexican stars?
Well, that's what I'm saying. So plus or minus 7, it's not that significant of a difference.
Well, you can integrate up further up. The companion can have a larger range of masses if you're a giant, if you want to argue that.
I just want to say that my sequence is incomplete.
Well, it is certainly incomplete at some level, okay? But anyway. I also should say that we found NGC 188 to show mass segregation in a previous paper. And this is a plot of binary frequency as a function of radius. And I've only shown three bins so that we can get some type of small enough errors. And you can see that in the central bin, we have basically in the core of the cluster, we have a binary frequency above 30%. And as you move out towards the halo, it's about 15%.
Back to the blue straggler binaries, there is one bias, of course, which is that if a blue straggler is just in the upper end of the main sequence, if it has a bright companion, then that can lift it into the blue straggler region where you can actually find it.
If a blue if an actual blue straggler has a companion?
Yes.
I see, to lift it off of the...
Lift it off the main sequence into the blue straggler.
Yeah, this is true. So I'll get to this actually in a little bit of one way that we can maybe detect blue straggler type stars on the main sequence, but the way that we're doing it, just looking at color magnitude diagram, it makes that very difficult. But you bring up a good point. Okay, so apart from just looking at binary frequencies, we also have, as I said, orbital solutions for the majority of our binaries. And so what I'm going to show a few plots that are like this. And what this is for this one, a histogram of the period in the log for the main sequence in the giants. The colored in areas are what we observe. Okay. The dashed lines are after I correct for our incompleteness. And these dotted curves here is the Duchenne-Mayer field normalized to our sample size. And what you should notice is that this for NGC 188, and I'll show a few other clusters in a bit, the period distribution follows very closely to the field. It is not flat in log P.
Well, if you look at the formations, three things are perfectly consistent, but you know that it drops below.
But we're certainly not missing any of these stars.
Many people use flat log P and then use some different formation.
Well, okay. Okay, but so keep that in mind. Just keep that in mind. Okay. We can also look at the eccentricity distribution. Again, this is the observed sample, and then I correct it for incompleteness. And now this, and so for the main sequence in giants, now this dotted line here is just a Gaussian fit, which is actually what the field shows for short period binaries. A Gaussian centered on an eccentricity of about 0.3. Okay. We do notice some binaries out here with high eccentricity. Possible that some of these are the result of encounters that would inflate or increase the eccentricity. I'm not sure. The punchline here is that it is not consistent with the thermal distribution.
Well, shoot that, but it seems odd to me that the completeness correction has no effect around about 0.6.
Yeah, so these two bins right here are a problem for my incompleteness correction, because the way that I do this is I decide which of these I would detect after the first three observations, which is, so it's getting into some detail. The bottom line is that from the way that I do my Monte Carlo analysis, I don't think I should have detected any binaries that we have had orbits for in here. So I can't actually apply an incompleteness correction. If I did apply my incompleteness correction to everything that we have in here, they would follow this Gaussian curve, actually. So it's not going to bump them up to here. Okay.
I'm trying to understand for giants. So it's flatter for giants, but it also at the same time means that they have more eccentric orbits. Is that right? Mm-hmm.
I have not been able to explain. It does look fairly flat. So I have not actually been able to explain why this should be the case. But again, keep this one in mind, because when I compare it to Jared's simulation, you'll see some.
How many objects are in that funnel bin there, sorry?
Here?
Yeah, once you get
this. This is one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not very many. Yeah, so this is the reason why the giants are binned in wider bins than the main sequence, because there's less in here.
Aaron, it may just be worth clarifying, since people are asking about it, that your completeness correction is actually primarily in the period.
Yes, this is true.
I mean, just so everybody's clear, it's not really an eccentricity incompleteness, it's a period incompleteness.
So the main cause of what's causing us to miss binaries is their periods increasing. But we really are not that, we're pretty much sensitive to every eccentricity as far as detecting the binaries.
So what does the period eccentricity look like?
I'll get to that in a moment. Okay. I forgot to mention that this is all for stars that have periods greater than the circularization period. So I'm not including any of the binaries that have periods less than 15 days, which is, we assume that all these should be circular in this plot. Okay, so before I get to the ULP diagram, I just want to show this. This is something that I've just recently seen. I haven't quite decided what to make of it. But here is a plot of eccentricity versus radius in the cluster center. And if you want to, you may notice that there is a decrease in eccentricity, kind of like the envelope of eccentricity as a function of radius. And actually, if you take the average eccentricity in here, the average eccentricity out here, they are distinct. So maybe this is a result of the fact that you have more interactions in a denser region where you have a higher binary fraction, and these interactions will produce higher eccentricity products. Hypothesis. Okay, so now your E-log-P diagram. This is basically what Bob showed you earlier, and this is for the main sequence in NGC-188 and for the giants. I have included this dotted line here, which is the circularization cutoff period. So one would assume that everything over here should have been circularized because of tidal dissipation. But there are a few that didn't do this. Okay. Most noticeably is that one. And maybe this is, again, a signature of some dynamical encounter that's increasing the eccentricity. Or maybe this is a sign that it has another companion, like a triple star, and we're in some type of Kozai mechanism where we're catching it at a high eccentricity. So I haven't been showing you any of the blue straggler data, and that's coming now for your big punchline here, is that now this is the main sequence. This is the blue straggler E-log-P diagram. What I want you to notice is how nearly all the blue stragglers have periods around 1,000 days with a wide range in eccentricity. This is distinct from the main sequence E-log-P 99% confidence when I do a two-dimensional KS test. So this is a observational signature of blue stragglers that we need to explain why it should be there. I'll get back to this.
All those blue stragglers do not exist in global clusters.
What's that?
All those blue stragglers do not exist in
binaries.
Well, how many are in binaries?
It's only slightly wider, so it depends where you are. If you're in the halo of a low dispersion cluster, you could survive that separately.
I see what you're saying.
But in a global cluster, that it's 1,000 days period, they be so.
No, it's sort of between 5, if I've got the numbers right, have I? Maybe not. It's roughly 5 and 10 AU, isn't it, something like that?
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, what I can begin with something like 300 is 1 AU. Okay, yeah, it's going to be just a little bit bigger, so it's only a few AU. And the hard soft boundary is 6, if E infinity is 10, and everything is solar. So it's not so crazy.
So they could survive in the center of global cluster?
Well, I think, okay, so it's complicated. That the hard soft boundary would be ground down to less today in the core, but you could have these in the halo of a cluster.
And this would not be 10 to 10 years old.
Yeah. Okay.
What are the companions?
Yes.
We're not sure for most of these. And this is something that we're hoping to get from observations in some time in the future.
Yeah, because certainly in Latham's work on the halo blue stranglers, he had claimed, I think, where he had a few that were evident to be in binaries roughly that separation from memory, and then he inferred those to be white dwarf companions.
They should all be white dwarfs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
well,
so
we know one of them's double one.
Yeah, I mean, we know one
of them's not a waiter.
Yeah. What's that here?
So I think I actually think that both the double line, there are two that are double line.
Okay,
so both of them are over here.
Yeah.
So this is something that we're hoping to look for to see, because there's a few hypotheses about how these can form, and this may be a test. For instance, if you have it formed in triples with, you know, three main sequence stars, there's a Kozai cycle that causes the inner binary to merge. You may expect to have a main sequence binary with a blue straggler on the inside, and it could give you periods around this, but of course the blue straggler would be bright enough that it would dominate the spectrum, so we might not actually see that main sequence unless we go to very high signal noise or look in certain lines.
It could be that it's just the primaries evolved as a giant, right? And that's what Latham thought with his white dwarfs.
Yep.
And they're just nice transfers.
Yeah. And so I drew an arrow to this one just as a, this is another another binary that is below the circularization period, but has a non-zero eccentricity. So either it hasn't had time to circularize, or it has recently gone through a dynamical encounter, or it has another companion that may be driving up the eccentricity. What I'm showing here is the cumulative distribution as a function of radius, used to seeing a lot of these plots. And the blue stragglers are these circles. The single stars are these dots here that kind of follow the same sequence as the giants here. And what I want you to notice is that they are suspiciously bimodal, the blue stragglers. Okay, you have a population that is near the core that looks centrally concentrated, another extended population out in the halo, which seems very similar to what people observe in globular clusters. Okay, here is as close as we're going to get to a distribution in V sine I in rotational velocity. I do actually have plots of the histograms if you're interested later. But what I'm showing here, this is for NGC-188. This is a color magnitude diagram where the symbols correspond to the amount of rotation and this projected rotation. And we have a legend here. The reason that most of these points are at the small 10 kilometers per second is because this is basically the limit that we can detect with our spectra right now. Okay, so these may be less than 10 kilometers per second, but not all exactly 10 kilometers per second. But what I am showing this point out is the larger than average rotation of the blue stragglers. And so 40% of them show rotation between approximately 10 to 70 kilometers per second projected. And you may say, well, they're blue, and main sequence stars over here generally do show rotation. So what's the big deal? But we don't think that these formed in the same way as main sequence stars did. And we don't know, exactly why they should have this rotation or if they have the ability to slow the rotation. And if you ask certain people how much rotation you would expect a blue straggler to have if it formed from collision, you expect a very high amount of rotation. So the other question is, why is it only 10 to 70, for instance, and not 300 kilometers per second? There are a few also rotating objects that are kind of hiding along the main sequence of the giant branch, and these could be analogs of blue stragglers that we wouldn't have noticed if we didn't have the rotation.
I mean, if you have a rapidly rotating blue straggler, by the time it's a red giant, it's spun down, right? So it must be something
else. If it has the ability to, yeah. If it has a magnetic field, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I should also mention that I've done my best to remove any short period binaries from this. So anything that should have tidally synchronized should not be in a figure like this.
Sorry, was that the reference? Just now, what's that thing way up there?
F.K. Comey is a very well-known, rapidly rotating giant that's thought to be the result of a recent merger.
It's belting out a big wind as well, isn't it?
I believe so, yes.
How big is it? And what's
it could be an AGB star. Yeah. It doesn't look like an AGB star, but it's not.
How big is it, and what's the...
There's a whole literature on F.K.
Comey. Yeah, I mean, what's the critical breakup speed? That's
it's pretty close to
something like that. Yeah, it's within a factor of two, something like that.
No, F.K. Comey's only rotating like 30 kilometers.
Yeah, skate speed is
okay. No, I didn't realize it was that. Yeah.
Okay, but even half of
something like that. Yeah, I mean,
it
cannot be a recent merger and then. Evolution. It must be a giant that swallowed something.
Right. Yeah, no, it's something that's exactly filling in. You've got a big egg beater, and it's all throwing stuff out.
And are you just gonna? Maybe that's what you're doing next. You're gonna say the NGC 6819 main sequence star.
So I'm showing this for NGC 188, but this is the least interesting for this type of an example. Most interesting comes in NGC 6819. I'm taking a little aside to talk about hidden blue stragglers. And I'm going to sum up the NGC 188 blue stragglers in a moment. But let me just identify the rotators on the main sequence in NGC 6819. And there's quite a few. And these, again, if you believe that these stars are more normal main sequence stars that are rotating at or below 10 kilometers per second, there needs to be some explanation why these should be rotating so rapidly. And so we're going to do some more observations to try to figure out why that might be. but this is a way to discover these type of stars that some, you know, that hasn't really been done so much in the past. I also want to just point out M67, partly because of the blue stragglers as well. These are also rotating of similar speed, and also just because there are a few stars in here that have rotation.
What are the open versus?
Yeah, so this goes back to something I did earlier. This is stars that we have data for. This is stars that we don't have data for. Okay, so these would be like Dave Latham's stars, and these would be our stars. Yeah.
So Aaron, the one point, this stuff is really cool, so I thought. The one point I just want to add, if you go back to, or if you go back one first, to 6819. So notice the color here, it's about 0.4, 0.45, okay? Don't, for the moment, don't notice these. Notice that at this age of a cluster, the vast majority of the stars are already spun down at a temperature of 0.45, or a color, 0.45. And now go back to NGC-1B8. These guys here, that, as Aaron said, well, you might say they're bluer, so they ought to be rotating, but they're the same color, right? So these guys here aren't like A stars that are rotating. These are late F stars that are rotating, and this cluster's older than 6819. So, you know, by all measures of normalcy, they should be spun down, but they aren't. And what we're hoping to do is... So what we're hoping to do, if you're all on the time assignment committee at NOAL and you give us time, is we're going to look at these to see if they have magnetic fields and see if they have any evidence for the mechanisms that we needed to spin them down. And if they do have them, then we might be able to put an upper limit on their age from the fact they haven't spun down. And of course, if they don't have them, then that's really interesting. So I'm sorry, I just
wanted to. But are they old binaries?
Yeah, but they're not that close. They're not tight.
So they're all like 1,000 days.
Mass transfer, right?
Had something mass transfer. So they would have been spun up in the not too distant past.
We shall see. That's what I mean. I know everyone in this room has their own interpretation that explains blue staggers, but that's what we want to find out.
Okay, so I would like to just give you a slide so you have all of the information most of the information that we have on the NGC-188 blue stragglers at your disposal. We've observed the blue stragglers in NGC-188 to have a binary frequency that's 73%, which is significantly higher than the main sequence. They have a bimodal spatial distribution. They show most of them are periods of around 1,000 days with a range of eccentricities.
What's the range of
eccentricity? Basically from almost circular to about 0.7,
it's sort 0.8. It's consistent with just a random subset of all the binaries, isn't it?
Yeah, fair enough, just about.
Do you see any difference between the properties of inner and outer stragglers?
No, we don't. They have about the same binary frequency, and again, this is small numbers, so it's hard to say anything definite, but they have about the same period. You know, for instance, those two shorter period ones, one was from the inner, one was from the outer. Okay. 50%, right?
And that eccentricity distribution shouldn't be taken for granted, right? I mean, you're talking about mass transfer processes.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I challenged.
I know. So I was tweaking you a little bit there. So, okay, fair enough.
So there's no significant difference between the blue straggler eccentricity distribution and the main sequence distribution.
Because that does challenge the mass transfer.
Yeah.
So just...
Okay, so questions that we want to answer, I guess, are how unique are the NGC-188 blue stragglers? Maybe this is some oddball, I don't know. And also the binaries in this cluster. And then what formation channels can produce this type of a population of blue stragglers, which is still an unanswered question. And so, Fred, you want something to add?
Well, I mean, just looking at this superficially, this is, of course, all qualitatively very reasonable and expected, right? I mean, the higher binary fraction, you know that in these clusters, you're not going to get single collisions. So it's got to be binaries, whether it's mass transfer interactions.
Okay.
It's got to be binaries. Bimodal, we've seen that before. Uh-huh. The concentration at 1,000 days, that's sort of the Hartzell binary. So if you ask, what are the hard binaries?
No, it's not.
The Hartzell boundary is like 100,000 days.
It's 100 times smaller, right? Because the Hartzell boundary is 1,000 AU, this is 10 AU.
But you're not detecting binaries.
But we're not, but there could be some that are of longer periods, except that there's only about three or four more that we don't, that we do not have orbits for. Okay, so they're not going to be a whole large population at longer periods also.
I don't want to be terribly quantitative here, but yes. that you would have a concentration at towards fairly large periods where the interaction rates are largest without going into very soft binaries that would become uninteresting. You know, that's, and then the slightly above average rotation, you know, it's from all models, whether it's binary mass transfer or whatever.
Well, maybe, but I have yet to see a model that is going to produce all of these characteristics.
Including Jared's model that you just showed us.
So, and I'll talk about Jared's model.
If it's binary single encounters, the extra opportunity you get for having close enough systems emerge is huge. Right?
Yeah, of course.
But then do you retain a partner still, you know?
Right. Nobody ever mentions, Peter Leonard has wrote endless papers about this ages ago, of how binary-binary interactions in particular, these high binary, you know, wide binaries that you can have in open clusters, high binary fractions, just binary-binary interactions very naturally produce collisions through resonant.
The
next interesting thing would challenge that. The other question actually then is...
I'm just teasing. I mean, you come from the Doug Lean School of Analysis, which is when after the observations were shown, it all makes perfect sense.
I guess a question with the binary distribution. So given the range of eccentricities, which is a challenge for the mass transfer, though it is true that Dave Latham did find some white binaries with white dwarfs in the halo, I think. We should check that. Yeah, exactly. I think that's true. The old Latham blue straggler rate in the halo, which I remind everyone is the highest specific frequency of blue stragglers. But then here, the question would be, if you have to blow that away and it's not mass transfer and it's a triple, so I've got a tight binary being merged by an X6, further thing further out. Mm-hmm. A question might be to ask then, is how far away does my triple thing have to be before it's stable for long enough, right? And it may be that you find that they have to be at this sort of distance.
Yeah. So there's a paper by Haggai Peretz that's either out or right now on AstroPH that talks about this exact thing with the Kozai mechanism from triples that induce a merger and then you're left with this binary. And they claim that they can produce this type of a, say, E log P distribution of loose stragglers just from triples and mergers. So maybe that's the answer.
The question is why you don't see them at 100 dice would be the question, right? And I guess then...
It depends on your period distribution and your triples, I guess, that you want.
Yeah,
but then... And Fabricio, right? So they have some way of explaining why you would actually get a concentration around a fairly large period after KCTF?
They do. I don't know off the top of my head what that is.
Well, isn't it just because you have to have a stable triple?
That's again the soft hard binary. I mean, you want to keep the outer orbit long enough to actually do at least.
It's not only soft hard.
You mean wide?
It's also very favorable for to have a ratio at least 100, but more, maybe 1,000 between the days, and in order to merge that quickly in inner binary, you have exactly this ratio. I mean, you couldn't have more than 10 days for the inner binary.
But why can't you have shorter periods than this? I mean, I understand you want to get enough Kozai
It's not hierarchically stable.
Yeah, that's the problem you see. Yeah, no, if you have a triple, if you have three stars, imagine you put three stars.
At least that's outcome of all the
people
that
are ejected.
That's right.
So there's a balance then. The closer you are, the more damage you'll do.
Fred's point's well taken. I mean, it's about a factor of 7 is the stability criterion for in A. And so I think you're probably right. I'd be willing to bet you get some
100 days for the outer orbits and a few for the inner one. That's going to be hierarchical enough to get nice Kozai cycles.
That needs to be checked. That's why we're here, to get you guys to answer these questions.
So if you'll let me, I will compare. I'll go on to comparing what we see in NGC 188 to what we see in other clusters. And then after this, I'm going to compare to Jared's model, if you want to stay around. So what I'm showing here are binary frequencies observed in M35 at 150 megayears, NGC 6819 at about 2.5 gigayears, M67 at 4 gigayears, and then NGC 188 at 7 gigayears. I'm limiting this to only be the inner 4 core radii so that all of these samples are at the same spatial extent. And again, just keep in mind that this is more or less a lower limit because we're not detecting binaries greater with periods greater than 10,000 days. And what I hope that you notice here is that these are fairly similar. Okay, none of them are, you know, more than two sigma apart from another one. So they're all, you know, mid-20s, I would say. And this is something that's fairly consistent across clusters of a wide range in age. And in the same way, this is consistent if I limit the field population from Duke and Mayor to only include this period range, they see approximately mid-20s. They see about 21% binaries in the field. So this is also consistent with the binary frequency that you see in the field. So this has been mentioned a little bit in that M35, an age of only 150 megahertz, may be a good cluster to help us get an understanding of what we should use for initial conditions in n-body models. Okay, so what I'm showing here is an eccentricity histogram and a period histogram, similar to what I showed for NGC 188. Again, these dashed lines are Duke-Noy-Mayor field distributions. This has not been, the circularized binaries have not been removed, so this bin is inflated by binaries that have gone through tidal circularization. I have not done anything to correct for incompleteness over here, so these bins are lower than they should be. And what I hope that you notice is that they're fairly consistent with the field, M35. What they're definitely not consistent with is flat distribution and period of thermal distribution eccentricity. So we should keep this in mind when we're starting our simulations. Okay, and this is for M67. Same thing, eccentricity, log period. Again, this is the field where we have, thanks to M67 having been observed for a very long period of time, very often we are have a lot more complete in M67 than we are in M35, for instance. So you can trust these bins pretty well. And again, they follow the same, a similar distribution to the field. And again, this is, doesn't look flat, and this doesn't look thermal. And I put this note down here because, as some of you know, M67, the blue straggler population, has about 60% binaries, similar to NGC 188, and also have the majority at periods of about 1,000 days, also similar to NGC 188. So this is something that, you know, we've seen it in two clusters of similar age, something that we should probably try to explain as to how this can be happening, because this may be a good insight into their formation mechanisms.
Yep. I don't really want to dispute your statement about flat and all the rest of it, actually, but isn't this just as consistent with flat as with Duke-Noy-Mayor?
Well, so I haven't put any error bars on here, first of all, okay? But you can imagine that we're missing some binaries over here that could pull this up. We may be missing a few here. We're definitely not missing any here, and we're not missing any here. So if I'm going to put in a whole bunch of, you know, if I'm going to make this flat, I'm going to be adding a bunch of short period binaries in here that we don't observe.
15.
Well, the consequence of adding these short period binaries, which I will say in another slide, is to potentially increase the production rate that you have of blue stragglers through mergers and things like these. So it's something that should really be considered if what you're trying to do is model something consistently and also explain why the blue stragglers are coming from.
So just a comment, these observed distributions, well, one of them was very young, of course, but this M67. Mm-hmm. This is an evolved distribution.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if you put something like this distribution in your simulations in the beginning, basically saying that the evolved distribution looks the same as the initial.
That's
distribution.
Right. So this is something that actually Nathan is thinking about investigating, and this is something that we can investigate through Jared's model as well. So I would expect there to be some evolution in distributions, and the question is how much, okay, and that depends on how many interactions are going to be taking place and what type of changes to these binaries happen in each interaction. And So this is a question that needs to be answered. One of the hard things to do observationally is, you know, try to get enough numbers to see if it's just a subtle difference, that there really is a difference, you know. So it certainly doesn't look like there's any very obvious difference, right? But there may be subtle differences that we're not picking up.
What is the hardness factor of a 10-day period binary in M67? So
I would
show the binding energy to the average kinetic energy of start. it's very large, and one of those binaries interact with a single set, they're going to be ejected from the cluster. So I'm not sure that you're not going to lose some of those short period binaries in an embodied simulation.
I guess I don't know the answer to that question.
What did you find, Jared, in your runs you showed us? I thought at this range you showed an enhancement, didn't you? Didn't we find
increased? Five binaries.
Yeah, the number of five binaries was increased in your runs, right? And the effect you described it being in your conclusions.
Yeah, it's up to the time by sort of factor of 10 in terms of KT. But, and the average kinetic energy is staying constant.
Yeah, but then a binary loop is about 5 days in M67. How hard is it?
Well, it probably has a similar velocity dispersion as NGC 188, M67 does. So the hard-soft boundary is at a similar place, which is going to be, sure, I think in periods, so it might be like 10 to the 5, 10 to the 6 days.
Those are going to be quite hard binaries.
Yeah.
I'd expect then if they try to
check them. Probably won't even count.
Sorry?
Yeah.
Whether they interact or not.
But. Right. I mean, if there are supposed to be, 20-something binaries that are in here, the question is, could they have all actually interacted?
That's what I was thinking as a follow-up to the question by Yagos, whether it makes sense to lose something like 5 or 6 binaries by ejection.
Yeah,
I think it sounds like it's possible.
You do lose binaries, like you say, in simulation, but at an exact frequency, I'm concerned.
I'm actually going to show you what happens when you evolve a period distribution that's flat out to the age of M67 in one slide. Okay.
So that told me that before.
I thought I'd let you all, figure it out for a little while. Okay. So now I'm going to just talk very briefly, because I know we're running low on time, is to compare it to Jared's simulation. Okay. And this was meant for M67, but as I've been saying, M67 and NGC 188 are very similar clusters. So we've done a comparison to NGC 188 because this is the cluster that I'm using in my thesis, but you can think of the results as also applying for M67, the cluster. So if I just look at the binary frequency at the end of the simulation, it's about twice as high as what I see in an NGC 188. And I put this up here, so let me just take one step back in that what I'm doing with this simulation is I'm actually observing it. Okay, I'm looking at it, I'm saying I can observe this magnitude range or this mass range, this color range, and I can only observe binaries that are less than 10,000 day periods. So that's where these numbers are coming from. So Jared showed some plots of the blue straggler frequency, and it is, so I'm comparing these two, and I'm only quoting 20% in Jared's simulation. But there are more blue stragglers that are too blue for us to observe in Jared's simulation, and there are a few in binaries that are too long for us to detect. Okay, so you can take that with a little bit of a grain of salt. Now here's what you're waiting for, is a period distribution. So, now what I'm showing here is main sequence, giants, blue stragglers. The colored portion is from Jared's simulation, and the solid white line is NGC 188, normalized at frequency. And this dotted line is the Dukenoi-Mayor distribution. So note that the simulation started with a flat distribution in log P. We did lose some of these, okay. But this is significantly different. Even if the binary frequencies were approximately the same, it's a much different shape that you end up with. You end up getting more short period binaries at the end than we observe. Okay, so these short period binaries, as I was saying, is going to increase your production rate for blue stragglers. Right. New mechanisms like mergers and things of this nature. Now I'm showing you the eccentricity distribution again. This is at the end of the simulation. This is the simulation. The white line is NGC 188 and giants and blue stragglers. This is all stars that are, all binaries that have periods greater than the circularization period. And so the first thing I just want to point out is that this simulation started with a thermal distribution. So this is something we're still talking about, is why. It now looks fairly Gaussian, right? So presumably these high eccentricity binaries have a higher likelihood of going through interactions and maybe being disrupted or creating interesting objects like loose stragglers. So maybe they were depleted because of interactions. The other thing to notice is this high amount of circular binaries. And again, these are binaries that should, as far as, you know, from observation, that should not be circularized yet by tides. But it turns out that most of these are from the circularization period of about 15 days to 100 days. And so the thing that might be causing this is some type of, is the tidal dissipation rate that we all think is added in correctly, maybe a little bit too fast. And this is obviously something that people are still trying to work on, and hopefully we'll be able to constrain this a little bit better in the future. But what you should realize here is that if you bias your population of binaries towards high eccentricities and you have strong tides, this increases the likelihood that you're going to have resonant interactions, like the interaction movie that I showed in my second slide, which will then potentially lead to mergers and collisions and again inflate your blue stellar creation rate. So this leaves a few things that we want to answer. If we were to lower the binary frequency to be something similar to what we observed, if we were to take away some of the initially short period binaries by putting in a log normal distribution as opposed to a flat distribution, if we were to remove some of the initially high eccentricity binaries by putting in a Gaussian distribution as opposed to a thermal distribution, and decrease the energy of the tides so that hopefully we can match the binary population on the main sequence, for instance, to what we observed, can we still create enough blue stragglers?
I thought it was the opposite.
Which was
just this discussion earlier with Jared.
Yeah, right.
Compared to the standard prescription, you need to increase the energy dissipation rate if you want to match the circularization period.
The problem is what happens after the circularization period, I think. So we don't observe very many circular binaries at all, periods greater than circularization period of a cluster. Okay, but this prescription does create a lot of circular binaries, say between 15 days and 100 days.
Is there some funny process that's going on, some sort of interaction, you make a merge thing that puffs up or something like that?
So this is something that we are in the process of looking into.
Fred, you're right. The sense that's needed here is the opposite of the sense.
The usual discrepancy is needed.
There's other cases where you want to have more eccentric binaries than your standard models predict. The variance star eccentricity period distribution, for instance, using some standard binary evolution prescriptions doesn't give you the observed distribution. So you need to pump the eccentricity up through some mechanism.
Yeah, this is actually, I have that paper sitting on my desk waiting to be read. So this is a similar problem that we're trying to address. But the question is, if we actually are able to bring the simulated binary population of normal main sequence stars to look like what we observe, what will this do to the blue straggler productions? And how will this, assuming that we can create some of these, how will this match to NGC 188 and M67? Okay, so these are questions that we are pursuing. And then also, how do the period, the eccentricity, secondary mass, mass ratio distributions, how do these change with time? How are they processed, if you will, by stellar dynamics and stellar evolution in these models? And can we detect them through observations of clusters of different ages? So this is my last slide to give you a taste of what is to come sometime in the near future. So very soon, Jared and I are going to start running an n-body simulation with the aim of matching NGC 188 in detail, matching the binary distribution, the binary population that we see, matching the blue stragglers that we see, and this will be a much more detailed comparison than we were able to do for, than Jared was able to do for M67 back when that model was made. So hopefully, we'll be able to, say a little bit more about what happened in the evolution of NGC 188. And the way that we're going to try to do this is to start with observed initial conditions. something like the field or like M35, like I mentioned in the last slide. We're going to use all this information that we now have under GC188 to help guide our model. And we're going to use this to study the binary population, the origins of the blue stragglers, and other interesting stars. And this will be starting nominally in the summer, thanks to a fellowship by the NSF. But hopefully, we'll get started on this a little bit sooner. So Bob and Jared did allude to this a little bit, and so I'll just say it again, is that sometime soon, we hope that we can, rather than just running one simulation trying to match one cluster, to instead run many simulations, so we can have, say, distributions of the output parameters and input, so that we can try to, first of all, match the different clusters of different ages, different characteristics, but also try to get a better idea of, you know, how stable something is. Like, if we create 22 blue stripes, is this something we can do every time, or does this just happen once in our simulation? Okay. And then this is something on the observational side that you should keep an eye out for, is that there are a few papers on NGC-188, and there will be a few more coming. And there will also be similar analyses of the binary population of clusters of different ages, like M35, NGC-6819, M67, and others. And this is going to be the same type of data that I've shown you here, which is ideal, actually, for, you know, trying to understand how you should guide your simulations. And then, as Bob was saying, we're going to do further observations of blue stragglers to first try to see if they have magnetic fields. And maybe this will help understand, you know, why they're rotating or why they're not rotating so fast. And also try and detect the secondaries, see whether they're a main sequence or a remnant, which could give us a clue as to how these were formed observationally. So I hope that I've made you interested in open clusters, and now, you know, hopefully not all of you will switch to doing open clusters so that I lose my job, but but I hope you enjoyed it, so thank you.
So maybe this is very nice, but the three things that you told about this binary properties of the blue stragglers. Mm-hmm. And so one is the binary fraction is much higher.
Right.
The second is the eccentricity tend to be much larger for longer periods.
Well, the second point would be that they're mostly at a period of 1,000 days, and these have a range of eccentricities.
Yeah.
And the point of the range in eccentricity.
Can you find,
yeah, I can put that.
The reason to expect multiple.
Well, the question about the range in eccentricities is, it's...
Can you bring up the plot? So I guess my question is, I don't understand why this is also weird. Because if you think about a scenario where all these blue stragglers in these open clusters are coming from mass transparent binaries, then you can think of the cases where the binaries started very close, and through mass transfer, they end up colliding or merging.
Okay.
You basically remove all the really tight binaries that end up showing as binary blue stragglers. So you can explain this like sparsity of points for low period blue stragglers. Then for the longer period, you can think of most of these blue stragglers coming from binaries through mass transfer process at some point in their evolution, and they do not merge or collide. So you still see them as binaries. And also, since they're really long period, they have much higher cross-section to interact with something else later on. And these strong interactions will pop up.
That's right. So this is a definite possibility.
Everything falls into place. So I don't understand why you need a hierarchical triple or any exotic.
So there are a lot of potential explanations of how this could happen.
Chip off field block.
It's a chip off field block.
Yeah.
ownership of the old.
We're not laughing at you. We're laughing at Fred. It's okay.
It's fine.
So let me just, I'll just say one thing about this. So I do follow what you're saying, and I agree that this could be a possibility, and this is why we might look for, say, a white door companion or something like this.
Sorry, one more. So,
okay.
I would actually be surprised if you do not see all these three things together in another cluster.
I think the problem is the range of eccentricities. The question is whether binary singles can encounter them fast enough to make them eccentric.
That's what I was going to say.
That's why you do not see these high eccentricities for small periods.
No, the problem, the thing I think that's a problem in the sense is not that you get them at higher periods. I agree exactly with you. In the mass transfer will increase the separations. I think the reason I'm surprised, and perhaps others may be too, is that getting the range of eccentricities is harder to explain, because one might have thought that mass transfer, Roche lobe filling mass transfer, certainly would probably have circularized.
No. It's when the mass transfer happened.
Yeah.
Followed by that, you have some single binary inference.
But the question is the time scale for that. Yeah. Going back to the T encounter formula, right, it's 30 million years for 1,000 AU. So at 10 AU here, it's 100 times longer than that. So maybe it can. It's 3 billion years, so maybe it's not crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
the time scale is an
interesting. Well, it's the time scale of the star. You don't have the good age of the cluster.
And I suppose that was my number density was 100, and this is much faster than that, right?
No, I just meant 3 billion years.
The question here is that the number density of the stars here is much lower than 100 stars per cubic parsec.
Also, is your blue stripe been selected so that they're more than twice the turnoff?
Binary singles can be possible.
Because you said you cut off above 0.7 magnitudes above.
Yes.
So then I don't understand, Sarah, how you would get a partial mass transfer in a binary, but still get a blue stripe that's more than twice the turnoff mass.
I did not listen to the first part.
Okay, so his blue stripe selection criterion says that it has to be more than 0.7 magnitudes above the turnoff, which means that the mass has to be roughly more than twice the turnoff mass. So if you're going to explain the blue stragglers in binaries by partial mass transfer, then I don't understand.
No. It's the mass can be less than twice the turnoff mass because luminosity increases very strongly with mass.
Yeah.
Twice luminosity increases twice mass as well as binaries.
Okay.
So it can't be two turnoff stars.
Yeah. It's not twice the mass if you're seeing them.
2.5
to like 0.7 magnitude high. So.
Well, I think that the takeaway point is that there are a lot of potential explanations, but it's not certain which one is going to cause this. You know, I mean, people have different ways that they can explain a lot of things, and if you can run it into...
Well, if there's multiple ways, it's going to be 50-50, right?
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully we can do observations to try to prove or disprove
why one. Why does the absence of short-period blue stragglers not, in a very obvious way, suggest that binary mass transfer is not a big part of the story?
It's not, or
is? It's not.
Interesting.
And also, the comparison to global clusters, I don't know if that we have these kinds of reliable numbers on blue straggler binary fractions in global clusters, but there certainly are a lot of eclipsing binaries among blue stragglers in global clusters. I mean, I have a vague feeling that there's actually a significant, sort of much larger population of very short binaries among global cluster blue stragglers.
That's interesting.
And then going back to Mario Matteo's work, you know, there's W or some majoris type things that are blue stragglers. There's at least a lot of circumstantial evidence that blue stragglers in dense global clusters are very short period binaries.
But the sort of period you'd expect here, I mean, Philip should comment, but mass transfer from
I was going to make two comments.
That's fair.
These period eccentricity distributions are also similar to what you see in the binary stars.
I believe that's true.
And unless they're all born in open clusters, the dynamic interactions would not be giving the eccentricities. And the second comment is there is a class of Roche lobe filling mass transferring binary systems that have eccentricities up to 0.6. They're called Vivisefi systems. Vivisefi itself has a eccentricity of 0.6. It has an orbit period of 30 years, so it gets more massive. But you clearly see Roche lobe overflow at your aspect.
So this is another possible.
If it were just simple mass transfer, wouldn't you expect that period distribution to be all filled to the left?
No.
So why would you only get mass transfer?
So 100 days is 1 AU, right? 100 days is what, near 1 U or a little less?
So, I mean, you can think that these small ones end up merging or colliding, and that's why you do not see them as binary today.
Would they still be at that orbital period if they were first mass transfer?
That's true.
I mean, if they're in that period, then they go into mass transfer.
Exactly. I mean, remember, these are only the stragglers that are now in binaries. So the shorter the period, the higher is the chance that it is not now in binaries.
Again, in global clusters, much denser, we see blue stragglers that are in contact binaries, I mean, down to periods of hours, and they live forever.
It's an interesting point. It's a very interesting point.
As is yours. I mean, this is going to be a rich topic for work. I will say one thing, it's sort of a global step back. One of the really cool things that happened was Jared ran his models and basically did a comparison with M67 in one space, or not just one, but, you know, Blue Stragglers was a big space. And at the time, we hadn't talked yet. You didn't know that these other data existed. So you were actually doing what we teach our children in classes, the scientific method. You were making predictions, right? And then we checked the predictions against the data. They're not working, which is fine, and then we continue on. And so my only concern about sort of, in a sense, having now laid it all out for you, is that we've lost that virginity in a sense, right? I mean, I have no doubt every one of you, if placed in a room, can explain this.
But there are 1,000 parameters we can tweak, and we don't have to tweak other
models. And in my mind, I'm asking myself, okay, so after they run these models and explain this, what is going to be the next, what's going to be the predictive dimension that we can work in to see whether your models are right? I don't know the answer to that, but it's something that's been bouncing around the back of my head.
This is not physics. We're doing astrophysics. There's too many free parameters and uncertainties to do that. You're not just predicting one thing and with very few or no free parameters. It doesn't work that way. I mean, we need the data to get some sense of what are the right values for all of the zillion fresh factors.
But to take a positive light on this, as time goes on, we have more observations. It gets harder for us to make models that fit everything.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And that is well said.
But I think in this case here, the log period eccentricity, I mean, you have a real, in a sense, you can do binary evolution calculations, and you can compare to other things like these barium stars that Philip mentioned. And so it's not completely, and it's not like we just tune a parameter that this has to work just for this, right? So the sort of mass transfer that's going on in this picture to make your blue stragglers will also be applicable for other kinds of binary systems, right? Mm-hmm. Whether you say, are these circular or not, will also compare to the one system that Philip mentioned, because now I've already forgotten.
No,
these eccentric mass transfers. So there is a whole large population of observed field binaries that will also sit in a sort of having mass transfer plane that one can compare to. So it's not completely just tuning a common envelope parameter just for these systems only or something.
Right.
So a little bit, a little bit more optimistic.
So, Melvin, since you mentioned the field ones, are those actually the initial conditions? Because yesterday you were telling us how everything, you could kind of explain everything by interacting at least once.
Well, no, I think, I'm not sure I said that.
Well, you implied that.
Maybe that was interacting once. I don't know, anyway, but...
What would be the initial conditions, not the ones that the DM plots that we keep seeing? How different could the initial condition
be? For the blue stragglers now, sorry. Or?
No, I did. Just the binary parameters for field stars, essentially, the eccentricity
I don't think we know. I mean, it depends. It's interesting that I mean, I'm particularly interested that Jared gets back the Gaussian, having started with the thermal, right? That is interesting. I don't know. I think in terms of the blue straggler binaries, we should all dig up David Latham's paper, because there's some mention to one paper at least, where they look for these halo blue stragglers and they talk about some being in a binary, and I just don't remember the. Well, I remember they were in a large binary period around 10 to the 3 days. Around, but I don't remember properly. And I thought they thought it was in binary of the white dwarf. But I don't, you know, I wouldn't say that we could really say what the prime order is not now.
Also, we draw any conclusions from the embodied model in terms of eccentricities based on what Aaron's showing. Because obviously you need to check the tidal treatment quite carefully before drawing any conclusions.
finding the companions would be very easy.
Well, as I said, I hope you're on the time zone.
Well, how many clusters with like what range of gamma do you have? The gamma interaction rate, like binary symbol or binary. But I was thinking that
I doubt it's very large.
If you have a large range, then this thing is obviously move.
But that's a different thing. But I think the binary single encounter time at 10 AU in this sort of cluster is extremely long. I think it's going to be
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to reinforce his effort to be predictive. This is very good.
I don't know. I mean, that's a number you really want to know. At that period there,
it's 10 AU, right? So
what fraction of binaries of that size would have had a strong interaction within the edge of the cluster?
Well, we saw that on Monday.
Use Peter Leonard's encounter time scales. So I plugged in numbers for MC188 using the binary fractions and got time scales for single binary and binary, and they're generally at a period at a separation of 1 AU, it's over 10 of the 8 years, but it's well underneath 10 of the 9.
So it's over 10 of the 8 years compared, and what's the age again?
For 1 AU.
7 years.
No, I mean, what I showed on Monday, right, if you do n sigma v, what I showed on Monday is for a number density of 100 stars per cubic parsec, v infinity 1, arm n is 1,000 AU in 30 million years. Okay, so any star will pass within 1,000 AU or something else in 30 million years. So if you want to go within 10 AU, then it's 100 times longer than that, and that's the number density of 100 stars per cubic parsec, which I think is probably higher than this, right?
I need to recheck, but
yeah, okay.
I think it is.
Yeah. So it's
also for that you actually need to do an integrated number.
No, that's straightforward. Yes, I agree. I mean, that number I quote there is just for an n sigma v. So there will be a tail. That's right, because that's just on average, and that's the average value. And of course, there'll be some unlucky or lucky ones that do things. That's right. But it gives us a sense. So it's certainly going to be a few 10^9 or more, something like that, probably on average. So it's quite lovely. Maybe this thing.
So we agree just from orders of magnitudes. There is no binary of that size that has not had a significant interaction in this cluster.
If his calculations are correct.
No, I don't think that's enough. I mean, the time scale here. Well, that's okay, for the whole lifetime of the cluster, that's right.
Yes.
Okay, no, I agree. But within the evolutionary post mass transfer time of the blue stragglers, that's not true, I would say.
And if that's true, I mean, what's particularly interesting is that, as I say, we see no at least gross changes in the properties of the binary population.
But it could be that the mass transfer, that what we tell kids in the lectures is wrong, namely that mass transfer always specializes binaries.
Oh, we don't tell kids that.
You're getting smarter than that.
You don't need all of these binaries to have a very the really high ones are these two lucky ones.
Yeah. And I agree, it's worth looking. I would agree with you that the average suggests it's unlikely, but it's worth checking properly.
Sorry. Just never agree with Melvin. And if Melvin agrees with you,
be careful. Be scared. Be very scared.
What do you guys think about?
I'd be interested to know what you guys think about the rotating stars on the main sequence.
Oh, the blue stripers?
They're not
blue
stragglers, right?
I guess the question I had about that is
I guess, in a sense, the question is, are they just sort of normal WUMA products, or do you require dynamics to get there? I mean, it's...
So I suppose how does it compare to the limit of zero density environment? I'm not sure. That's, I guess, what we must define for.
Well, then you would basically need to know rotation, whether or not you have these rapidly rotating stars in the field. And a lot of things.
Because certainly there aren't stars that will just merge if you give them a line, for example.
NGC-188 has one of the richest populations of WUMAs. Mm-hmm. It's also one of the oldest clusters.
Mm-hmm.
So they may or may not be related.
But see, again, in a sense, that's a predictive question. I mean, at some level, I'm asking for, you know, suppose they're collision products, suppose they're transfer products. Is there any way to tell the difference?
I suppose the transfer product is something left with it going around it.
Yes.
That's a difference, right? But if you collide it, you get a one-to-one collision.
Yeah, you guys are just talking about mergers out of double units.
Quiet. Yeah, but at the point you have two stars that merge, and there's another companion star, although it's right, that's the difference, right? So if you have mass transfer from something, then it's still the remnant is still around, so it can be quite a wide warp.
Double units from single stars.
Yeah, exactly. So. But if you have a wide mass transferring system that's making these things, we would predict, I think, that there's a white dwarf.
Yeah, that's right.
So
that's only a prediction for
us. Isn't that a problem with staying blue stragglers that don't
show much rotation?
There seem to be systems which are good candidates for mergers or having increased amount of mass, but I'm not rotating as rapidly as they should. Quite a few examples.
Based on the mechanisms we're thinking of for producing them, more of a concern is that 60% would tend to
some of them are
So with all this talk about unidentified binary strange stars, how much should we believe, what fraction of stars are normal stars as we are taught, and how much should we believe mean sequence fitting when all of this goes on? Because as Lars was saying, even the red giants show all this thing. So what is, I mean, what's your estimate when you do main sequence, your ages and metallicities are much larger because of all of this stuff going on?
Well, from at least the plot that I showed you, that with the single stars, that removed anything that had periods that we detected of less than 10 to 4 days, okay? But then it depends, I guess, what type of underlying distribution periods you expect that could describe anything that we're missing. So if it's log normal, there's probably quite a few that are, you know, longer than 10,000 days and less than the hard stop boundary that may go into this scatter.
I don't know if it's stars are probably the 90% of stars no one ever talks about.
Well, binaries are 50%, right? And we are not identifying the binaries. And
if you take cuts across the main sequence, you see a ridgeline and then a tail. And you know, people who really fit carefully fit that ridgeline. And so to that extent on the main sequence, I think we're probably okay. The giants on the
giants are tough.
And actually, you guys are focusing on the width of the 188 giant branch. Perhaps more interesting is how incredibly narrow the M67 giant branch is. Mm-hmm. Ken James wrote a paper on that in 84. He said he takes out the barium stars, he takes out the known binaries, and he's got this thing as like a line. You know, and
because presumably it's not just its mass, so its age, but also rotation can change the giant branch.
But it has to be fairly massive.
Yeah, I was wondering actually as well, it seemed a long time ago now, but at the very beginning, before you started interrupting you talked about one system that had two blue stragglers in a tight binary, didn't you? And both of them were kind of too massive, right? Is that right?
It had a mass ratio of one.
Yeah,
you didn't tell us the mass.
You didn't tell us the mass.
We don't know.
No, I'm sorry. I'm
missing stuff. No.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I couldn't think of a very good way to estimate.
Okay, well, I was curious, because it's still a hard system to explain how you make that. And I was going to throw something
in. 5-day binary.
So now Fred can get upset with me again and tell everyone not to listen to me.
I just love this.
Well, that's fine, Fred. Then you can just stop listening and everyone else can hear a good idea. That's okay. The question is then, if you have a tight binary, there was a number of ideas to explain blue stragglers when people started seeing them, apart from just collisions or mass transferring. And one of them could be, if you have your core of your star rotating enough, you can affect the lifetime of the star. And so an interesting question is that at all viable if I have two equal mass stars that are really rather close together at all? Yes. So the question then is that system known to be, you're going to tell me it's not rotating at all now.
I know.
Well, so it'd be interesting to know if you could measure the V-sign, I think that's possible.
I am going to go, I don't know for sure,
right.
But I don't think, it's certainly not rotating very rapidly.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if it's rotating above our detection limit,
yeah.
But as I recall, it's not rotating, if it is rotating, it's not very much. Because, you know, for instance, I'm able to see all the spectra and not blending together very much.
It's what's went on in the past. So it's just something that Flagg would be thinking about, because there was this, well, I guess it was Hengstrand. People had talked about this a long time ago, right? The blue strand would get the core star rotating like each next star bit longer.
Yeah, there's a whole literature on this.
Yeah, yeah, good. So that's something I just wanted to point out.
But again, to get that, you would need these very, very short periods.
Yeah, but it was a short period system. What we're talking about was, what was the period?
Was like 5 or 6 days.
So it's quite a short period system, so it could be worth thinking about.
We should let Aaron sit down.
Yeah, no, no, no.